Blog Talk Radio.
Full Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Full Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Whole Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Whole Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Full Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Whole Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Whole Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Full Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Full Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you. Full Power Living with host Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, will begin at the top of the hour, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. In the meantime, please enjoy the music. Thank you.
What happens when changes human beings experience leave them open to new medical conditions or illnesses? It's important that we know they are happening, that some people work to figure out what can be done about those medical conditions, and that this information be given so that those at risk or already suffering have things they can do proactively to at least slow down the development of the condition. And that's what we're talking about today on Full Powered Living. Lymphedema and lipedema, which are two conditions that can be helped by changes in eating and nutrition. Lead researcher Chuck Ehrlich is here to tell the story. So welcome to Full Power Living, where we're helping the world to realize and work with the importance, power, and mastery of human emotions. We welcome your questions and comments on the chat on Blog Talk Radio and on emotionalpro.com. And you can also call in now, toll free, 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Well, Chuck Ehrlich is a medical writer for Lymph Notes and the organizer of the lipedema study group. He's been studying nutrition and lymphedema since 2005, and his background includes explaining many complex topics. He also teaches and consults. He has a master's from Case Western Reserve University and an MBA from the University of San Francisco. And of importance to us today is that Chuck Ehrlich and a team of renowned specialists have written a comprehensive guide, Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide, which he's here to talk about today. So, Chuck Ehrlich, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you.
Well, before I was approached by Booth Media, I had never heard of these two medical conditions. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing them correctly either, so let me know. But how long has modern medicine been dealing with these two conditions, lymphedema and lipedema? Is that correct?
That is correct. The lymphedema and lipedema have been known to medicine for a long time. The lymphedema is pretty well understood. Lipedema has been in the medical literature since the 1950s, but is not as widely known and does not have is not frequently recognized as what it is because of the new research on the science behind it, that lipedema is both a fat disorder with an inherited component and a form of lymphedema. So let's start with lymphedema. It's edema or swelling that is caused by issues with the lymphatic system. Most frequently, the causes are damages to the lymphatic system from cancer treatment or other surgery or other medical events, but there's also an inherited form of lymphedema. And the result is that tissue fluid or cellular waste gets trapped in the skin, and then over time this leads to the accumulation of abnormal fat. So the affected areas get larger and get heavier. They're very prone to infection. There's 1,000 times more likely to be infected if you have this type of lymphedema than normal skin. And the swelling can become disabling and disfiguring. So this is why since it's a progressive condition, we want to make people aware of it, be aware that they are at risk for it, and improve what they eat in order to slow the progression of the condition. And if they develop lymphedema solely as a result of obesity, they may be able to reverse the condition by improving what they eat.
Wow, that's good news. So I want to get to lipedema too, but what's in my mind is if I started to develop it, how would I tell?
Well, the way you would tell if you had lymphedema is that you would have swelling that persists. This is not the same as swelling, like if you injure your ankle, it'll swell up, and the swelling will go down in a day or two. This is swelling that persists over time. It may get better or worse depending on time of day, depending on whether you've been standing, but it's there repeatedly, day after day. Can also have a cyclical component in women, where women will have more swelling certain times of the month than other times. But it's persistent swelling. The swelling in lymphedema is seldom symmetric, and it will lead to fat accumulation.
We did a program some time ago with Dr. Barry Sears. He wrote a book called Toxic Fat. You may be familiar with it. And he sort of had an idea that the body was attempting to sequester toxins by buildup of fat. What's your idea of why fat develops when this condition occurs?
That's an interesting Sears, and I'm not familiar with that one. I've seen some of his other books, and and one of my co-authors is Dorothy Sears, who's actually a cousin of his, and has done some work with him. Because she is also a nutrition researcher. But what we find in lymphedema is that lymph causes the accumulation of fat. This is a part of the body's response. Normally, it's part of the body's response to injury, because fat and fat will accumulate around lymph nodes in order to provide them with a source of fuel to fight infections.
So then, if that system is blocked, that's why infections can occur more easily.
Yes. It means infections can occur more easily for two reasons. One is that the system is blocked, the activity of the flow of the lymph in presenting antigens to fight infections is impaired, and because the fluid causes the accumulation of fat, so that both contribute to infection. In the case of lipedema, there are multiple factors involved in the fat accumulation, because there are abnormal levels of hormones. And let me just talk about lipedema for a second. Lipedema is not about fat lips. It's both a form of a fat disorder and lymphedema. In the early stages of lipedema, it affects primarily women. They show abnormal fat on the lower part of the body, particularly the hips and thighs. The fat starts out being very symmetric, very smooth, and then over time the fat becomes lumpier and nodular and less symmetric. And again, it can be accumulate into larger amounts that can become disfiguring and disabling and cause orthopedic issues. And so there are many things driving the fat accumulation in lipedema. We don't know all of them, but they're clearly hormonal abnormalities. And part of our research shows that one of the factors that contributes to hormonal abnormalities are the gut microbes and the dysbiosis of the gut that leads to issues with the regulation of estrogen and other values.
Dysbiosis means destruction of the flora in the stomach, in the gut?
No, dysbiosis means an imbalance of the flora in the gut.
Oh, okay.
It's not destruction. It's an imbalance. It's not specifically a disease state, but it's an overgrowth of types of bacteria that are not helpful, such as E. coli. And then when the E. coli die or are killed, they shed particles that are called endotoxins. And endotoxins get into the bloodstream in several ways and produce inflammation. So endotoxins are the cause of systemic inflammation, which is characteristic of lymphedema, lipedema, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, a whole host of related conditions. Endotoxins also interfere with the function of the lymphatic system. So there's a vicious cycle here. They stop the pumping action of the lymphatic system.
Wow. I missed that when I was reading through the book. Yeah, that's really very powerful. Now, a couple of other things that I recall. Lymphedema can start in infancy. It's not something, infancy, puberty, and later years, I seem to recall. Whereas,
for the inherited form of lymphedema, that is correct.
And
The secondary form that's caused by cancer treatment or other medical events will show up typically later. And the two forms are not exclusive. If you have the inherited form of lymphedema, you have a much higher risk of developing lymphedema as a result of cancer treatment or other medical treatment.
And lipedema is the one that causes the fat to be painful. Is that because of the things like the endotoxins? What's the pain about?
Painful fat syndrome is one of the names for lipedema. It's one of the characteristics of the syndrome because the fat can be painful just being there. It is very sensitive to touch. It will bruise easily, and there are many factors that drive this pain, including the pressure on the nerves and damage to the nerves from the fat accumulation around them.
And we're talking a lot about fat, but to develop these conditions, you don't have to be fat. The fat can accumulate as a result of developing the condition. Is that correct?
These conditions will cause fat in specific areas. So lipedema in particular will cause fat on the buttocks and the hips initially, and it will accumulate. You will end up with fat that where the bottom part of the body is larger proportionately than the upper body, but you may not be obese. You may not, so you may have fat on the hips but not on the abdomen initially.
Mm-hmm.
And however, what does happen is that it will be combined with obesity in many cases. And in the case of lymphedema, obesity can be a cause of the edema because the conditions are related. And you particularly in obese people with chronic venous insufficiency, congestive heart failure, other issues of that sort, they will develop lymphedema of the feet and legs.
But I noticed in some of the pictures that it's possible to develop lymphedema on your legs and hips, but not your feet. It's almost like you have a cuff before your ankle or at your ankle.
Lipedema will initially affect the hips and legs and stop at the ankles, and this is one of the characteristics of it. And you get this peculiar cuff, and then as it progresses into the later stages, it will cause lymphedema, the swelling of the feet. This is why people say that lipedema causes lymphedema.
We take
a different view of this, having looked at the physiology in a lot more detail, that there are lymphatic abnormalities in the very earliest stages of lipedema, And so that we say that it is both a fat disorder and a form of lymphedema.
Wow. So let me back up for a minute. I think a lot of us don't pay much attention to our lymphatic system. And so my understanding is it's a system for fluids to collect, especially toxin-laden fluids, and deliver them to the blood system so that the toxins can be cleaned and eliminated. Tell me more about the lymphatic system.
Well, the lymphatic system...
Correctly.
No, you're doing fine. The lymphatic system parallels the blood circulatory system in many ways. The vessels are close to each other and have some common evolutionary patterns. But the blood circulatory system is a pumped circulatory system, but very little re-enters the blood circulatory system because it is pumped. Any tissue waste, any fluid that escapes, is collected by the lymphatic system. It is processed. The lymphatic system is a major part of the immune system, so it's processed to identify any sort of disease or pathogen and to fight it. And lymph nodes are an important part of this function. That's why if you say somebody has swollen glands, they're actually have enlarged lymph nodes in the
mm-hmm.
neck because they're fighting an infection. And the nodes bulk up when they get active. And then the lymphatic system collects all of this waste and then eventually returns it to the blood circulatory system in the veins at the base of the neck.
Mm. So to have the lymphatic system work well, that's part of moving our bodies. It's a more passive system for pumping than our blood system, as I understand it. And the conditions of lymphedema and lymphedema, when you're carrying extra weight or extra fat, that and if your joints are painful as they can be in lymphedema, that also contributes to this vicious circle where it would be very difficult to move your body as well. Is that correct?
Yes. That is uh-huh. correct, and there's another factor in there that's another silent epidemic, and that's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is highly correlated with body mass, so that if you are obese or morbidly obese, the likelihood that you have fatty liver disease is very high. Fatty liver disease has a number of harmful effects, one of which is contributing to the development of lymphedema, because as fatty liver disease progresses, the amount of lymph that is created by the liver goes up by as much as 8 to 10 times the normal, flooding the lymphatic system and leading to swelling in all parts of the body. But also the other changes from fatty liver disease impair muscle action and make it harder to move. So,
wow.
There is a reason why obese people move less, and it's not just that they're heavy, but that their muscles don't work as well because of the fatty liver disease.
Right.
So
it's
important to do a couple of things. One is to avoid things that fuel fatty liver disease, such as fructose and alcohol, and the other is to eat foods that support healthy liver function, such as cruciferous vegetables and eggs and a specific type of fiber called inulin fiber.
All right, I want to talk more in detail about that. We're up to our first break, Chuck. So those of you who are listening, call us at 888-498-0570 to ask your questions. And we're going to be discovering some of the emotional and psychological costs of these medical conditions on our next segment. So come back. You're listening to Full Power Living.
result is for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them. Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. Let me remind you to call in now to talk with science writer, researcher, and author of the blog lymphnotes.com, that's lymphnotes.com, Chuck Ehrlich. We're at 888-498-0570. Next week on Full Power Living, we'll be just 2 days past Election Day. What a relief. We'll be finished with that whole season. And some of you who listen to Full Power Living are going to be disappointed. So I've decided to address what happens when we develop expectations about something and what we can do when life disappoints us, how to keep ourselves from going up and down when events and circumstances around us change, particularly if it's change we don't like. So expectations and disappointments is the topic, and I will be the guest. So to help me prepare for what matters to you, I ask you please to email me questions that you might have about expectations and disappointment. Write me at Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at emotionalpro.com. That's Eileen at emotionalpro.com. And then be here next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time to get the insights and answers to your questions. And thanks again for inviting your friends and family to listen too. And we've got a lot of wonderful shows scheduled for you. So go to our homepage on emotionalpro.com and click subscribe, and we'll put you on the list so you get notification of our upcoming shows and events. Today, I'm talking with Chuck Ehrlich, who's a research team leader for a group investigating the effective things to do nutritionally for two medical conditions that are affecting more than 10 million Americans today, lipedema and lymphedema. So, Chuck, two of your researchers have been diagnosed with lipedema or lymphedema. And can you share at least part of the story of one of those people and what they've been able to do with what you've learned through your research?
Sure. We can take each of them in turn, because
okay.
it's circular with the research, because we also incorporate what has worked for them. Dr. Emily Eicher, who is one of our authors, has secondary lymphedema of one leg as a result of cancer treatment that she received many years ago. And she has also been living with lymphedema since the 70s. Her lymphedema is well controlled. She is in good overall health and continues to have a very active life and an active practice, specializing in lymphedema treatment in Santa Monica. One of our other authors is Linda Ann Kahn, and Linda Ann has been a lymphedema therapist for many, many years. Also has a history of having struggled with her weight, and then as part of her training as a lymphedema therapist, When she was studying in Germany, they told her that she had lipedema, something that she had not really realized, is lipedema is not that well known.
Right.
So she has since learned much more about nutrition and has been able to change what she eats. She looks great. She's very active. She's got a lot of energy. She has an active practice in San Diego as a lymphedema and lipedema therapist, and is teaching active in aromatherapy and a variety of other areas. So we have looked at what both of these people are eating as part of the input for our recommendations, as well as looking at the research literature and the physiological models and pulling together a wide variety of different information sources.
That's so wonderful. I appreciate that very practical way of working with it. And it's interesting. I'm so glad you shared these stories with such a positive connection, because I have to say that reading your book was difficult for me. It was difficult not to feel down about anyone ever having to wrestle with these conditions, and some people even starting in infancy. And the fact that so often, or not often, I don't know how often it is, but the fact that it also could start up in puberty and can be disfiguring, it's just heartbreaking. And it was very, very difficult. And I was wondering, you don't really cover it in the book, but I was wondering, I know it's sometimes hereditary, but how far back can people go to realize family patterns? Or does this just come up kind of out of the blue?
In order to recognize family patterns, particularly for lipedema, you can go as far back as you have the information. There won't be a formal diagnosis, but if you know, if you read Linda Ann's story in the introduction, you know, one of her aunts told her she had the family legs. And this was... this is the history, and being an inherited condition, lipedema can be passed through the father, although it may not manifest. It's much more common in females. Lipedema is rarely seen in men. When it does, it's tied to hormonal imbalances, and this is an area for further research. But there's a family history there. In the inherited form of lymphedema, you may also have a family history. The genetics of that are better known, and some of the genes have been identified, and that's particularly for Turner syndrome and other forms of lymphedema that will be visible at birth. Sometimes even can be detected on the sonogram.
Oh wow! So if we allow some genetic modification, is there hope that at some point that we might be able to modify even in utero, so people aren't born with the issue?
There is always hope for things like that. The genes involved have wide ranging effects. So I don't know that we're close to that sort of a solution at this point. There are, however, a number of treatments in the pipeline for lymphedema that include some surgical techniques for reversing breast cancer-related lymphedema they include some drug treatments that have shown some promise for treating lymphedema. So there is a lot of work now on new treatment options, and there are several treatment options that are available, but they are chronic conditions. And even if treated mm-hmm. surgically, if you have liposuction to remove the abnormal fat, you continue mm-hmm. to have to use compression and pay attention to the affected area.
So all you're doing is removing fat. You're not changing the process.
You're removing the fat. You're not necessarily changing the process. There are things that will change the process in terms of helping to restore lymphatic function through techniques like lymph node transplant and lymphovenous anastomoses. And it's controversial. People can get both the liposuction to remove the fat, which is a specialized type of liposuction. It should only be done by someone who's familiar with treating lymphedema or lipedema, and the other surgical techniques to try and reverse some of the lymphatic system damage.
And so that raises a question in my head. Do insurance companies support these processes, or I imagine they're very expensive as well?
In some cases, the insurance companies will support the processes. In some cases, the insurance companies are taking the view that the surgical treatment is still experimental and they will not support it. It's complicated, and it's not really an area that I want to spend a lot of time on.
Thank you.
But I want to come back to one of the points that you made earlier, which is the emotional aspects of this. And because these conditions are upsetting, these are not happy diagnoses. But at the same time, many of the people, particularly with lipedema, are actually hugely relieved to know that they have a condition, that it's not mm-hmm. their fault, that it's not because they're lazy, it's not because they're weak, it's not because of something that they have done. And people will go through a whole gamut of emotions of joy and grief and reassessing and dealing and learning to deal with this. So it's important to have the information and to understand what your situation is and to understand what you can do that will help you to feel better.
That is something that intrigued me as I was reading the book, that as a psychotherapist for 44 years now, I realized that if you have something going wrong with you and you can't figure out what it is a huge relief to at least get a diagnosis, to know that there is something going on and it's not a matter of your imagination or something you don't know or some mistake you're making. So I'm really glad you made that point.
Yes. No, it's a very important point. We've recognized that for a number of years. One of the first books that Lymph Notes published was Dr. McMahon's book on overcoming the emotional challenges of lymphedema. Because there are so many issues associated with this diagnosis, and particularly people who have survived cancer only to get the consolation prize of a chronic condition. There's a lot of anger issues. There's a lot of self-image issues. There's a lot of practical issues and time commitment and all of the things that have to be dealt with there.
Well, you know, I'm turning 74 this month, and one of the things people complain about as you get older is it takes you longer and longer to get out the door, because there's so many things you have to look after. And I in reading the book and with your recommendations, and I you know, really support what you've recommended, but I was amazed at how much time it would take. You've got to get compression, you've got to get massage, you've got to make sure you're eating properly, you've got doctor's appointments, you can't get places very fast sometimes. It's really a consuming bunch of conditions, medical conditions, especially in time and energy and effort.
Yes, and this is why we want to reach people who are at risk or people who have the earlier stages of these conditions, because anything they can do to slow or reverse the progression of these conditions will help to help them to maintain and improve their functionality, and not have to deal with the things that you see in the more advanced stages. Dr. Eicher, continues to be early stage in terms of her lymphedema, despite having had it for probably 40 or 50 years.
Wow, that's amazing.
And as does Linda Ann. She's also, if you look at the stages, she's still stage one lymphedema.
Wow. And that's
the stages and the progression are explained in the book, and there are pictures and examples of each of the conditions in the stages.
Right. And you're also, part of your main aim is to let people know that they can slow down and kind of corral these conditions through actually some fairly simple things like changing diet and adding vitamins and supplements. Before we move on, though, you mentioned Dr. McMahon. Can you give us the name of that book again and the spelling of his name?
It's her name. It's Dr. Elizabeth McMahon.
Her name. Okay.
And she is a clinical psychologist and my wife. And the book is Overcoming the Emotional Challenges of Lymphedema. And that's published by the same publishing company, which is Lymph Notes, LYMPHNOTES. And that's available can be ordered from any bookstore or Amazon.com.
Great. So I'm thinking at least some of you who are listening may know people and want to help them. So I think this is it McMahon, or is that correct?
McMahon.
A-H-O-N. Oh, I had it right the first time. Okay. McMahon. Good, Elizabeth. So since you brought up a little personal angle, part of the question that I want to ask you, Chuck, is how in the world did you get interested in this? You've got an MBA. You're a science writer. What drew you to this area of research?
I got interested in lymphedema a number of years ago because I now have two family members with the condition. And that combined with some of my other interests, and so why we have gotten into this whole area of providing information and support to people with these conditions and the therapist to support it. And it's out of the relationships that I've developed from going to the professional meetings for many, many years that I developed relationships with Dr. Eicher and Linda Ann Kahn and Dr. Herbst, that we've put together the team that has assembled the information for this book.
Good. All right, thank you for telling me that. So your book, Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide, what you're doing with that is you're presenting what you've learned through your research, essentially that through changing one's diet and eating certain things, some of which you've mentioned already, and not eating others, you can actually slow the development of the disease or the condition. And I don't recall that you said you can actually cure it, but sometimes people can lose weight and sometimes they do have improvement. Is that correct?
That is correct. In some cases of lymphedema that are primarily caused by obesity, by changing what you eat, you can reverse the lymphedema. But
wow.
overall, you can slow the progression. You can reduce the pain from both lymphedema and lipedema, and you can feel better and do more. And that's really what
that's really what
we're all about here.
And that's really wonderful. So your book goes into great detail about physiology, how the body uses nutrients and what nutrients are needed. You also give complete lists of foods that are best for working with the conditions, those that can be eaten sometimes and those that should never be consumed when you have these conditions. And you give recipes, shopping tips, lists of culinary equipment, and special tips for meal preparation, and also a question and answer. That it was like if I took my granddaughter, who's 11, and I wanted to teach her everything there was about nutrition and feeding and nourishing herself, that's what I would want to include. It's a very thorough book. What led you to be so thorough with that?
We took such a thorough approach based on some feedback that we got. We had early versions of this that we shared with a number of people, and we tried to identify all of the barriers that people might run into in order to make these changes and to address them. And
mm-hmm.
if you know, for your 11-year-old, that's wonderful. This nutritional advice is basically good for anyone. It's consistent with best practice in nutrition for many, many different conditions. The factors that we've included include research on things that can be done to reduce the risk of cancer or to slow the progression of cancer through nutrition. And also some of the work that Dorothy Sears has done on when you eat, which is,
mm-hmm.
is interesting. Her research, which is included here, shows that by basically trying to eat primarily during daylight hours and extending your fast between your evening meal and your breakfast, that you can reduce your risk of breast cancer and diabetes, is what her research focused on.
Wow.
You bring up
the Sears name. I want to get back to something I learned by reading Toxic Fat, because you're talking about the impact of corn oil and soy products and so forth. And what I learned in that book is that Americans ran into our major obesity problems from the time of the Nixon administration, when the agriculture, the head of the Agriculture Department, Earl Butz, decided he wanted to figure out some products that Americans could ship overseas and make money to increase our GNP. And those were corn oil products, soy products that had a long shelf life. And I was very interested in reading your book that those are those very same things, you know, not, and we can talk about meat in a minute, but not eating those things really can make a difference. Because why? What did your research show? Why don't corn oil and soy, mini soy products or soy oils, why don't they work very well?
Well, in terms of the oils and the fats, both corn and soy are high in omega-6 fats.
Right.
And you have several kinds of what are called essential fatty acids that you have to have. Humans are not able to synthesize these acids, so you have to get some of them from foods. And around the time of this change, the balance between the omega-3 fats, which are anti-inflammatory and health-promoting, and the omega-6 fats, which although they are essential, are pro-inflammatory. It used to be that we were close to an even balance between the two types of fats, and that many meats, because the meats were grass-fed, were primarily omega-3 fats. And what has happened over the intervening decades is that corn and soy in foods and in animal foods have become predominant, and this has led to a huge increase in omega-6 fats in the diet to the point where they overshadow the omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all highly pro-inflammatory. And we get corn not only as fat, but we get corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup, which is one of the major drivers of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and other conditions, because of the way the fructose is processed in the body. It has to be go to the liver to be broken down, and it gets converted into fat by the liver.
So it brings up a question in my mind. I lost my husband this year. He was a doctor, and I've always been interested in nutrition and in alternative medicine. So he and I had many interesting discussions, and his contention was that the food is food, and the body will change it as it needs. And mine was more like, listen, if you take your fancy car down to the service station to get gas and it takes premium gas and you feed it regular, it's not going to do as well. And so it's interesting. I'm wondering, do you have support from the medical community from this this approach?
I'm sorry for your loss, and the analogy that I would make would be if you take your fancy car down and you put in diesel or biodiesel or cooking fat, which is really what it is, your fancy car is going to stop running. And yes, there is support from the medical community on this. There are several things in this change, because several things have changed. One is a change in the fats. The other is around the same time, the health advice shifted to avoiding fats, and many people replaced fats by carbohydrates and highly refined carbohydrates and processed foods. And so there's much more acceptance of within the medical community in the research that it's not simply a calorie, it's a calorie. It is the type of calories, the types of fats, the types of even the type of sugar. It's not all, there are several different molecules of what is known as sugar, one of which is fructose that is metabolized differently from sucrose or lactose and has to go to the liver and be broken down and gets converted to fat there. And then the others are and what we have is overall is we have the great increase of whether Earl Butz is responsible or whatever, but many, many more high-margin foods. Foods are become profitable when you can mark them up. You sell them for a price that's much more than your cost of ingredients. They have a shelf life because they're so shelf stable. They can be exported, and so you have all of these processed foods with the holy trilogy of sugar, salt, and fat. Each of which has its own harmful effects. Sugar is addictive. Dr. Lustig at UCSF has made a strong case in terms of how sugar is addictive, how salt is a facilitator for this addiction. And the combination of sugar and fat leads to changes in the gut. When you're eating fatty foods, bile is released, makes the gut more acidic, promotes the growth of gram-negative bacteria like E. coli. E. coli grow on sugar. They love sugar. The sugar will cause them to double, with your E. coli population, to double in 20 minutes. Every 20 minutes. And so you get this dysbiosis, this overgrowth of the gram-negative bacteria in the gut. And as these bacteria are killed or reach their end of life, they release the endotoxins. And the endotoxins get into the bloodstream and promote inflammation and interfere with the function of the lymphatics, amongst other negative effects.
That is a beautiful step-by-step description. Thank you. A couple more things I want to mention about your book is in order to help people keep track of how to work best with themselves, you also recommend that people keep records on what they eat, what their moods and emotional reactions are, what their weight fluctuations are, what happens when they eat new foods, and also to keep track of what's actually happening in the body in terms of edema, to measure the body at specific points. And the point of doing that is that people get to know themselves and what they need and what they react to in both positive and not so positive ways. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the amount of record keeping that you need varies depending on what's going on. But if you have things that they're pretty particularly stable, then you may not need a lot of records. But it is very helpful to monitor your weight, because this will reflect any changes in edema very quickly, because fluid is heavy. And if you have swelling and the swelling increases, you'll see it in your weight very, very quickly. The people who need more detailed records are women who are menstruating and have cyclical changes. There you really need to be able to look at things over a 28-day cycle to see what's going on from one cycle to the next, not just from day to day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very helpful for identifying things, for being able to take action early if something needs to be corrected, to see what's working, to have the information.
Right. And I want to mention also that in your book, you note that people may have been eating a typical American diet full of pizza and desserts and sodas, and they now need, if they're going to slow the progression of these conditions down, they need to eat vegetables, fruits, eliminate wheat and rye, for example, and sugar or artificial sweeteners. And you have a very supportive discussion of how to go about changing our eating habits of a lifetime. And I think it was very supportive, and I really appreciate that you put that in your book.
Yes, we try and cover all of the bases, try and remove as many of the barriers as we can.
Right.
Particularly, being gluten-free is inconvenient. Almost every really convenient food that you want to see has wheat wrapped around the outside of it, whether it's a burger or a sandwich or a wrap or whatever. But many people don't process wheat well. They react to it in several ways. It raises the blood glucose very quickly, so it becomes a sugar when it's metabolized. And in many people, it increases intestinal permeability, which is one of the ways that endotoxins get from the gut into the bloodstream.
Well, it seems to me that so many people have these two conditions and the related conditions now that it's possible that everyone who's listening, either you know somebody with this issue or you know somebody who has it. And so, Chuck, as we end here, what's the most understanding and helpful thing a person can do or say in support of a person who has lymphedema or lipedema?
Well, the most important thing is to be supportive, to understand, and to try and understand where the person is and guide them in ways that will be beneficial to their health. Accompany them. If it's a family member and you want them to improve their nutrition and to eat a healthier diet, start eating a healthier diet yourself and share that with them. It's something that the whole family can do. It's much easier if the whole living unit does this and everybody does it together, rather than there having to be separate things and you know, this is grandma's food and this is the baby's food and whatever. And that also means that things that are not beneficial will not be in the home. So that
yes.
If you get the high salt foods, the high sugar foods, just keep them out of the house, keep them inaccessible.
Yes. Very good.
If you're going to cheat outside of the house.
All right. Thank you for that advice. It's most helpful. I am really grateful to you for teaching us so much about these two medical conditions, lymphedema and lipedema, and associated things such as the liver disease, that I certainly knew nothing about. And I think it's really wonderful that you're bringing all of this to the world's attention, and also that you're giving something that people can do that has been proven effective. So let me remind you that Mr. Chuck Ehrlich's book is Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide. And his blog, where he blogs, is lymphnotes.com. So, Chuck, thank you very much for being with us on Full Power Living today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So next week, listen to Full Power Living as we explore disappointments and expectations, right after the conclusion of our very long, contentious and strange election process this time around. We'll be here again next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, so invite your friends and family to listen with you. You can listen live or you can listen on our archives, and you can also subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. We are grateful to you for participating and being part of our Full Power Living family. Full Power Living's producer today is Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.